We turn now to an interview I did earlier this week with Ellen Teller, Government Affairs Director of the Food Research and Action Center. Teller discusses hunger in America, including child nutrition programs, food stamps, and the Farm Bill. Ellen spoke at the annual membership meeting of the Hunger Action Network of New York State. This is Mark Dunley, and we're talking with Ellen Teller, who is the keynote speaker at the recent Hunger Action Network annual conference. Ellen is the longtime director of governmental affairs for the National Food Research Action Center based in D.C. Ellen, can you give us a sense of the status of hunger in America at this point, and how do you feel about the present Congress and Trump administration on this issue?
Well, thank you for inviting me to join you today. And the status of hunger in America is getting better, but it is still not good. We see that the years of the recession, obviously, more people were thrown into poverty and hunger, or food insecurity, as the USDA calls it. It definitely tracks poverty in this country. So obviously, when the recession hit and people were losing jobs and their hours were getting cut, they fell deeper into poverty, and then their food insecurity grew. And now that we're seeing that the poverty numbers, which actually come out this week, we're anticipating they will get better. Food insecurity is also, the official numbers are getting slightly better. But of course, when you've got millions of people in this country who are unable to go into grocery stores and afford a nutritionally adequate diet, that's too many. And so there's still a lot of work to be done to make sure that people have the jobs that afford them the ability to purchase a nutritionally adequate diet.
Well, you mentioned jobs. I mean, it is estimated that as many as one out of six Americans at some point, you know, experience hunger. But, you know, how many of them are, you know, sort of the working poor? And, you know, what are the demographics that might interest people? For instance, the number of elderly people using emergency food programs or using, you know, SNAP?
It's always a fascinating thing for me that, you know, people always want to talk about, well, you know, who is utilizing food stamps? Who's utilizing these federal government programs? And when you explain to people that the vast majority, three quarters of SNAP recipients are children, the elderly, and the disabled, you know, because there's always this, you know, mantra of people need to, you know, work. They're shocked to find out that those that can work are working, and actually most of them are working multiple jobs and trying to cobble together a living. And for many years, I served on the board of our local food bank in Montgomery County, Maryland. And so often we had to have satellite areas and satellite hours. And when you're, you know, handing out the food boxes, most people show up in their uniforms. They're in the service industries. A lot of them worked in our hospitals and our nursing homes. And their pay just wasn't enough, considering the very expensive rents that are in the D.C. metro area. So most people are working, but they're struggling because their wages have not kept up with housing costs and utilities and transportation costs.
Now, one of the I guess anchors of the anti-hunger programs in the United States are the various child nutrition programs, school lunch, school breakfast, summer meals, the Women, Infants, and Children's Program. Now, we've been, you know, reauthorizing these programs over the last 4 or 5 years ago in a five-year cycle at the federal level, but didn't really hear much about what happened with Congress. And so what did they do about, you know, these programs, and, you know, are we adequately funded?
Well, it's very interesting because every 4 or 5 years we get very excited about opening up the books on the federal child nutrition and school meals programs because advocates across the country are very anxious to improve on the programs and to continuously make them better. The problem with Washington and Congress is there's this notion that if we want to improve a program, if we want one additional child to receive a school meal, we have to find a way to pay for that meal. And the only way that we can pay for it is by cutting another program in the jurisdiction of that committee. And so you come across this horrible scenario that, you know, we worked for months on a bill that would provide an additional snack or meal to children who are in childcare for more than 8 hours a day. And most pediatricians and childcare providers would tell you, small bodies, small meals throughout the course of the day. So we thought that if a child is in care for 8 hours or more, they should get an additional snack or meal. And there was nobody in Congress that opposed that. But yet they said, well, how are we going to pay for it? And then the way they wanted to pay for it was by cutting SNAP, food stamps. And we said, no, that you can't cut one program to, you know, sort of plus up another program. So that's the scenario that we're faced with. And so when the child nutrition bill failed to move, in a way I was relieved because it looked like they were going to pay for improvements in the child nutrition programs, in summer feeding, in after school, and in school meals, by cutting SNAP, and that's just unacceptable.
Now, just last week in New York City, Mayor de Blasio finally agreed with the city council and agreed to do free universal school lunch for the New York City schools. And I know that in recent years there has been this big effort to try to get more towards universal school lunch and school meals, some people trying to do breakfast in the classrooms. How has those initiatives fared in recent years across the country?
Phenomenally well. As you said in your introduction, I've been at this quite a while, and when I first started working in the anti-hunger movement over 30 years ago, the big push was to get school principals to embrace school breakfast. And then we, you know, faced barriers with, you know, the mess and, you know, where to have the kids and the bus schedules. And what really turn the tide on breakfast and universal meals was the studies that started to show that children who ate breakfast in school did better on their standardized, you know, achievement tests. And then we would hear from school nurses that fewer students were coming to the nurse's office with, you know, aches and pains and headaches. And then we had the assistant principals saying, well, gee, since we started our school breakfast programs, we're having less behavioral problems in the classroom. And so all of a sudden, these different sectors and different parts of the school building were coming together and saying, you know, we've got like a magic bullet here. This is really working, and it's providing a really good tool to improve our children's not only educational attainment, but also health outcomes and other factors in a child's life. So it started catching on all across the country. More and more states and cities are adopting what's called the community eligibility provision, which says if you have a certain number of children who are eligible for free and reduced price meals, rather than wasting time on checking boxes and verifying information, let's just say if so many children are eligible for free and reduced price meals, let's feed all the kids and let's take away all the stigma and let's make sure all of our kids go to school ready to learn. And years ago, we had a conference in Washington, and Thad Cochran, who's a fairly conservative senator from Mississippi, was speaking, and he's been a great champion of the anti-hunger programs throughout his time in Congress. And in the middle of his speech, he just turned to the audience and said, you know, I don't know why we charge for meals. We don't charge for textbooks. We don't charge for the buses that take our kids to school. And he said, if I would have to do it all over again, I would not charge children for their meals. I would just say it's just an integral part of the school day. And the crowd went crazy.
Now, over the years, one of the arguments raised against some of these programs is that, oh, giving food to people breeds dependency. They don't go out and try to find jobs. Even Mayor Bloomberg in New York City would argue, well, you know, if we give them breakfast, maybe they're now getting two breakfasts and it's going to create obesity, and really should be the parents' responsibility to feed their kids. Has those type of arguments increased under, you know, the Trump administration?
Well, it's a little too soon to tell, but all I can tell you is that in the last decade, we've improved the quality of not only the meals that are served in school, but the meals that are served in out-of-school time and summer programs, in the child care programs. They have a new meal pattern. So there's this infusion of fresh fruits and vegetables and whole grains and low-fat milk products that have been introduced into the diets of children. And I love hearing these stories that you have this generation now of children that are coming out of childcare and getting exposed to fruits and vegetables that high school students never were exposed to. And now they're coming into the primary grades. And the fact that there's broccoli or carrots, fresh carrots, or peaches or apple slices on the lunch tray is nothing new to these children because that's what they were eating in childcare. So what I love is when I hear stories of kids coming home and saying to their parents, you know, we had, you know, this or that at school today. And when they go to the store, that's what they're pointing out to their parents. I was just in Ithaca this weekend at the farmer's market with my daughter, who's at school there, and I loved seeing all these small children at the farmer's market, and they are, like, biting into tomatoes and all these this different produce. So I really think we have a new generation cropping up, and I think school was probably the first place that they got introduced to these.
We only have about 2 minutes left. Now, SNAP, the old food stamp program, is funded out of the Farm Bill, which is, I think, the largest and certainly probably the most complicated bill that Congress does. And not only deals with SNAP, but it also helps farmers by creating more markets and how we provide subsidies for it. What is the Farm Bill shaping up to this year, and what are going to be some of the key issues that are going to be struggled over?
Well, I think that it is one of the most complicated pieces of legislation in Congress. It's got, I believe, 12 titles to it, and nutrition, Title IV, is the largest of all the titles. You and New York State have a wonderful champion on the Senate Agriculture Committee in Senator Gillibrand, and I found that the testimony of Sonny Perdue, who's the USDA secretary, was very interesting because when he first appeared before the House Agriculture Committee, his comment about SNAP was, well, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And I think that's the most important thing in defending SNAP, which I believe we will be in the posture of doing in this coming year. The Farm Bill expires September 30th of next year. We believe that Congress is actively engaged in putting together the Farm Bill now, and probably in the spring we'll see it on the House and Senate floor. But I think the big issue here is that the program works. It works exactly the way it was intended. When the economy is weak, the program expands, and when the economy gets stronger, we see participation go down, which is what we're seeing now. And so I think we need to make sure that we have a strong federal nutrition safety net in SNAP that reaches to people when the need is great. And so we'll be actively protecting both the structure of the program and the funding of the program in the coming months.
We have about 45 seconds left. Double question. I believe your website is frack.org, but if people want more information how best to do that or to get it involved, and how does quickly the United States compare to, say, to other industrial democracies in terms of dealing with hunger?
Well, I would encourage people to go to the Frack website, www.frack.org, and we have resources there, both on SNAP and the child nutrition programs, which could give you some local impacts and data, and also drilling down some of the programs by congressional district, which especially in New York State is very important because you have lots of moderates in the state. And we have a federal nutrition safety net. It's not perfect. And that's why the emergency food providers need to come in to help support those that either run out of SNAP benefits by the end of the month or are ineligible for it.
We've been talking with Ellen Teller, Director of Governmental Affairs for the Food Research Action Center.